Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
There's a lot of great tennis players, like the same as every other sport. There's a lot of great tennis players and golfers and all that sort of stuff at the bottom levels, and it really is.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy,
proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
It is live pod time. Limerick's drive for five still very much alive when it comes to the All-Ireland Championship. Two wins away now from potentially uncharted territory at national level. But when it comes to the Munster Championship, they are the kings. They've completed six in a row. First team ever to do so. A six-point win against Clare to make history in the province. Clare's way for Munster glory, now stretching into year 26. We'll see if they can come back over the next few weeks and get back into contention in the All-Ireland Series. TJ Reid, 2-6. Kilkenny landing their fifth Leinster crown on the spin in Croke Park. Very comfortable. 16 points in the end against Dublin. Realistically, that game was done and dusted by half-time. Adrian Mullen with a huge performance coming back into the team as well. And Offaly have ended their seven-year absence from Hurling's top table. Brian Dignan, Oisín Kelly with the goals. The faithful victory, 3 points against their neighbours Laois in the Joe McDonagh Cup final, having agonisingly lost after extra time against Carlow last year. Offaly are back in the Leinster Senior Championship for next year. The small task of taking on Cork this weekend, with Johnny Kelly, the manager, saying realistically, Offaly going to be the beer for 3 days. So we shall see how Cork, one of the All-Ireland contenders, do when they've got the doubleheader in Tullamore this coming Saturday. More importantly, though, and all that stuff that's happened on the pitch, welcome back, Paul Murphy.
How you going, lads? I enjoyed Podge last night, or last week, should I say. Great man. I hope he doesn't do too good of a job, though. That's the problem.
No, one thing stood out, Murph. So on the car up to Dublin on Saturday, I listened to the pod for the first time because I wasn't feeling too well early in the week. All sorts of accusations that I've been on the beer for 2 days and that's the reason we couldn't do it. Skell wasn't too well either, so we'd push back. Genuinely, you can still hear it in my voice. I was legit sick. But anyway, I listened back to it. And what I noticed, Skell, amazingly, our swearing totals were so down last week. Podge brings a certain amount of class to the podcast.
A certain amount of canvas, yeah. Yeah, Murphy, you could be at times, Murphy, you could be a small bit erratic. You'll be off that kind of craziness. Yeah, it's you. It's not me. It's you.
I think it's because it's like when Podge was on, we all know Podge well, but Podge might feel like a visitor to your house. So you kind of feel like you have to dial down the craziness when you have visitors in your house. So when it's just the three of us, like, we're very familiar. So maybe that's where the familiarity and a little bit of swearing comes in.
Tell me,
you can't blame it back on me. Go on.
Random thing here. Have you special biscuits in the house for the visitors? That you're not out of touch.
Not really.
We have them in our house now.
As in, are these biscuits, Skell, that you don't break out unless it's a top visitor who comes in?
These are chocolate Kimberleys and club meals. I'm not out of touch them. And they're just there staring me in the face. I bet you she's watching, so I want one right now for the pod. Sorry, I digress.
Say you're having one for Murphy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I still won't get one.
We'll get into the games in a minute because I see the comments are flying in on both the Facebook and YouTube there after the weekend. I don't know. Maybe the finals were a little bit underwhelming, was maybe my feeling, but we'll get into it now in a second. Yeah. Before we do that, though, look what's coming up. Now, if you follow us on Twitter, you already know about this, and I may well have DM'd you a link at some point, but we have got a roadshow which is coming up. And what a top guest we have. I'll admit, I was quite drunk when I was texting Sean Ogg about coming to the roadshow, but he still said yes. And like a gentleman, he took my poor spelling when I was coming back to him on Friday night as no problem whatsoever. And he totally understood when I said, Sean Ogg, I'll ring you on Monday. And he said, looking forward to talking to you then. So our first guest for our roadshow, which is coming up Wednesday, June 9th, it is the 19th, in Dolan's, in Limerick, where we went, where we saw, where we conquered, where Skell broke a chair, is this man, Sean Ogg. There you go. The great Sean Ogg, one of the great All-Ireland speeches as well from Sean Ogg O'Halpine. He is our first special guest for Dolan's in Limerick coming up on Wednesday, June 19th. Two lads are going to be here. It's the first of the year. We listened when you said, go west. We couldn't go to Dublin last year, the week of the final. Admittedly, we will be in Dublin for the second roadshow. Spoilers there, which will be All-Ireland final week. Details on that to be announced as well. But we are going west for the first one. Lads, I'm sure, first of all, Skell, you're massively looking forward to going back to Dolan's and to Limerick here.
Yeah. And I expect to have a few free pints because if there's any other type of person there'll be a big insurance claim there. So no, I'm a better man than that now. I'm a better man than that. So just make sure the furniture's of better standing. That I'd say. And Crack of the Ash, I know you're there. Reveal yourself.
They're sitting in the background. That'd be a great show, though, if we get to reveal who Crack of the Ash are.
Reveal yourself, yeah.
I'm hoping they're there because I'm about to use an edit that they made in a few moments' time as well. So, you know, there's a bit of give and take. They get some content from us. I've taken back their content because I wasn't arsed looking at the Limerick celebration videos from last year. I couldn't find where they were. So I've taken their bull in a moment, which I'm going to show that video. But for you, Murph, going back to Limerick, this is going to be good fun.
Yeah. We had a great night in Dolan's last time. And Sean Oak, it's a great guest. I mean, the interview he did with was it Joe? Was it Joe Malloy?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was All Ireland final week last year. It was incredible.
Yeah. Like Sean Oak is a guy that we probably haven't heard as much about over the years since he's retired. Like, you know, he's obviously doing his own thing and in and out of media a small bit, but like anything I've seen from him, he's been absolutely brilliant. And particularly that interview he did with Joe. So yeah, I just think he's a great guest, kind of a Tommy Walsh type character, and that great energy to them, great enthusiasm. So I just think there's going to be a great atmosphere with him on the panel.
Yep. Well, there you go. People are obviously very happy to have Captain Murph, to give him his full title. And I did see some people on Twitter earlier saying we should just call this pod the three fucking nobodies come to Limerick. I'm all for that. But when you look at the ticketing page, I'm not sure they're going to be overly happy if that's the title. Now, the good thing is if you decide to come, tickets are €20 all in, includes everything, booking fee, all that type of stuff. It's all going to Focus Ireland. All proceeds from the tickets will go there. We've got a great sponsor in Bord Gáis Energy, sponsored the pod year round. They've sorted us out with a budget for the venue and to get some great guests. And it won't just be Sean Oak. I'll be announcing more of them over the next few days. Some familiar to the pod, some not so familiar to the pod. But all proceeds, if you buy the ticket, will go to Focus Ireland to help them with their work as well. So hopefully we're going to see a lot of you, particularly those of you who are over on the west side, to be able to join us for this one. If we want to get into it, my contention, first of all, Scale, about both finals being a little bit underwhelming. This wasn't quite the Clare Limerick seesaw battle that we've had in the last two. This one was probably the most comprehensive. And Saturday was one-way traffic altogether.
Yeah, like I suppose in terms of entertainment for me, the best game of the weekend was probably the Drummond Dunham final in the last 20 minutes. Although you might say that yourself.
No,
you probably have no nails.
You but, say all the right things, but my...
You probably have more nails after biting them off.
No, my whoop said all the bad things, which is my stress level was the highest for the week in that last 20 minutes. No surprise, yeah. But the two main finals, go on.
I suppose diving into them, I suppose we start in chronological order, but like the Dublin Kilkenny game was, you know, was a tough one. Even I said to my wife when I saw the Dublin set up in the first 2 or 3 minutes, 5 minutes in the puck outs, I said to Grace, 20 points. Because the way they were setting up, they wasn't going to allow them to play the way they normally play. And in my notes, I've written down, like, you know, Donal Burke erratic shooting, like of old. So, like, you know, the shooting he had to do on the sideline under ferocious pressure, that wasn't the way they've been playing over the last, I suppose, six or seven weeks. And they did revert back to type, revert back to habit. And Kilkenny just let them alive. And Dublin couldn't contend with Adrian Mullen at all. Mullen kept coming out deep, kind of finding himself up into space. A bit like Galway did with Dolan Burke. Not really man-marking him, not really shattering him, knocking him down. He ends up with what? Was it 7 points from play?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's just far too much. Like, when you allow Kilkenny to come forward up to their own 30, 45-yard line, then hit it into ball winners, Owen Corley, John Donnelly, Massey Keown, TJ Reid, all come in their own ball. And that's exactly what happened. And in the flip side, when he tried to do the reverse, Dublin just couldn't do it. And it was a really underwhelming final. And unfortunately, there was a couple of mistakes that gave away a couple of goals, which killed the contest entirely. Kilkenny would be delighted to come away with A, the victory, and B, with limited damage done to their squad. There wasn't really a high-intensity battle. There was no, I would just say, there'd be no war wounds, if you like. And they're going in fresh.
I suppose Keane Kenny's ankle aside, but it seems he's going to be okay.
What have they got? They have 4 weeks now, give or take?
Mm. Yeah.
Is it July 7th or 8th? I can't remember what the date is, but... That's what they have now till their next real battle. So they have time on their side. And Derek Kling, if he's in his position right now this morning, he's delighted. So underwhelming final. Today's final then, excuse me, it was very rugby-esque in the first 20 minutes. You know, it was hard hitting an awful lot. It was really good, but I never got the sense that Limerick were in trouble whatsoever. You know, I always got the sense that whatever Clare could throw at Limerick, Limerick could just take the punch and move on. And I did the kind of the jewel battle. And I was like, said, right, how many jewels have Clare won? And I put down a grand total of 0. They didn't win any jewel whatsoever. So when you start from keeper up to 15, how many jewels did they win? I have nobody. So they lost all, you could say they lost 14 out of the 15 and maybe a draw. That tells its own story. And it was whatever gap, you know, Limerick Hard and clear. No, back to clear. Had a dependency on Freeze in the second half against the Breeze. They couldn't get the ball inside the forward lines. That's why they brought out Shane O'Donnell and brought out, you know, even the likes of Fitzgerald and Duggan deeper. And they just didn't have the answer. Limerick are a level that's way above everybody else systematically, you know, from a coaching perspective. And it all, we were hoping for a titanic battle that would produce the, you know, the fireworks of previous years. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. And look, Limerick move on.
Like, Murph, something that really stands out, they put it up on the RT coverage at one stage. I think there was about 10 minutes left at that point, and it was the turnovers won, and Limerick had doubled them. It was 22 versus 11 at that point, and Limerick were still going strong in the final straight of that match as well. This was the hunger you expect out of a team who've waited a quarter of a century to win a Munster, not the team who are going for six in a row, but Limerick still bring that fight. They still bring that intensity every time.
Yeah, and I think it was summed up by one passage of play where Limerick were up and David Reedy went chasing back. I think it was Peter Duggan, and he just hounded, turned over the ball. But I agree with Skehill. Like, I mean, well before that, I just got the feeling that Limerick were winning this game. I think if you're invested in the game, if you're a Limerick fan or you're a Clare fan, it's a very tense game. It was close for quite a bit, but if you're a neutral looking at it, you know, it seemed that Clare were working that bit harder for scores, where Limerick were just pipping them off. You know, even the wides as well, you just felt there was something just off there mentally a small bit with Clare. At one stage, I think until Ian Galvin scored, I had Clare down for five scores, and I had, I think Limerick were up at 10 at that stage. So, like, even that in itself was just showing that Limerick were getting scores from a wide variety of places. And, like, there just seems to be a thing I see happening where, like, Garrod Hegarty, he gets through a huge amount of work for about 40 minutes. And then once that game opens up a small bit, he starts hitting the scoreboard. Then, like, quite often Garrod Hegarty can go 35, 40 minutes without scoring, but gets through huge work. And then it's like, I'd compare it to likes of Joe Canning or Henry or someone getting a score for, like, Galway or Kilkenny back in the day. When Garrod Hegarty got the goal, it just felt like, this is it now. This is, like, such a turning of the screw now for Limerick. But I just felt all over the pitch. The energy just wasn't there with Clare. The wides, they just felt that edge that we've seen from Clare, you know, not only over the last few weeks and months, but over the last few years, it just wasn't there. Whereas you felt that you looked at the Limerick bench and the lads they were bringing in, and it was just a case of, it had the feeling of a good, strong Limerick win from a long way out. And, you know, it mightn't have been pretty at times, but look, they were just very effective, and they did what they needed to do at really important times of the game. So, like the goal before half time, that was important for Clare, and they nearly needed something like that, just a moment where they could just hit the back of the net. Mightn't be pretty, get a goal, go in at half time, reset and come back out. But when they came back out in the second half, was it about 1-5 to 2 points after 10 minutes in terms of Limerick hitting them? So, you know, it was just, you couldn't really point to any one particular place where Clare were dominant. And then you look at when they did get tired and Limerick started pushing it out to 4, 5, 6 points, the long ball is starting to be struck from your own 45. Like, that's nearly a symptom of you're starting to lose your way in the game. And they just started striking these long balls down on top of Barry Nash, Dan Morrissey. And all those things end from about 15 minutes out. I was just going, no, this is Limerick will eat this up, and they'll lap it up, and they'll do what needs to be done. So disappointing for Clare fans today, because they would have felt going down the road that we're in with a shout here. But it was far from the performances we've seen from Clare against Limerick over the last few years.
Yeah. Before we dip into the comments, Skell, you got a collector's item there, which was a Quaid mistake, really, for the Duggan goal. But he made one.
Ah, hold on now. Ah, come on.
I did know.
He should have. Jesus, Will. I'm telling you.
Am I being harsh here? Go on.
You are being harsh. Jesus, yeah. Man. Yeah. I'm surprised out now, right?
I think that's actually very harsh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, you know, I always talk about the level of difficulty for certain mm-hmm. elements, right? That ball that he dealt with, that bouncing ball right beside him, when there's hurdles flying at close quarters, for him to save it, first of all, brilliant. But his eyes are down. You have to understand, he can't see what's in front of him. So he tries to scoop it out. That's just complete misfortune, I have to say.
And if you look at where he scoops it from, it's actually a little bit behind him. It's not kind of in front where he can just slap it. He has to back and scoop it out. So the first angle that I saw it on wasn't great, but the one on the end line where you see where he passes by the ball, has to reach back and scoop it. Like, I think, to be honest, if he scoops that low anyway, Peter Duggan pulls. Like, if you look at Peter Duggan, the All-Ireland semi-final last year, ball comes to him. He reacted, pulled, great save from Owen Murphy. But Peter Duggan was ready that if the ball came high, he'd catch it. If the ball came low, he was pulling. And I just think Nicky Quaid, the only thing he could have done other than that is maybe scoop it out over the end line. But sure, half a second to think about it, not even.
Yeah.
I think it's, I was actually really impressed with the save, first of all, because it was a bad one. Really?
Why no?
Well, it seems defenders strike union one. Are here now. I would have thought now a ground stroke from that angle would have been far more difficult than it getting scooped up into Duggan's hand.
You could be right. But like if that ball was a fraction from the line, a fraction of a yard from the line, he doesn't have time to think about it. He's just trying to get it out of there. And like, he doesn't have time to process, is Duggan there? Is anybody there? Who's there? He's just trying to get it out. And like,
it's your vision, Murph. The trouble is that in that situation, I've been in times your vision is trapped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's trapped. It's like you can't see what's going on, so you have to do something erratic. I had to do it against Kilkenny where I lied the ball in the final.
Yeah.
It's because you saved one and then I can't see and then just get down top of it because remember, was the guy a yard away from you or 5 yards away from you? Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Probably the only thing he could have done is flicked it over for 65. That's the most he could do.
Goalkeepers union. There's only one goalkeeper here, sure.
Well, Wheeler was a former goalkeeper.
Well, now in fairness, not a very good goalkeeper, so maybe I should have been a lot harsher myself. Richard there probably evening it out there saying, harsh.
That's how you really think, Richard, yeah.
Harsh. Well, what I was mainly trying to do was actually to get you to talk about the good save first. You see, this is what you do as a presenter. You know, you get people talking. Oh. And instead, Skella to throw it back on me. But go on, tell me about the readjustment for the first save, though. The really, really impressive one.
The one off Ed McCarthy, was it?
Incredible save, yeah.
So that one, again, level of difficulty, I suppose. If you have to think about it, he's in such close proximity to you that he hits the ball so hard that your reaction time is minimal. You don't have actually time. So he got lucky in the sense that it was in his right height and area. So it was a bit like, do you remember the one last year where Aaron Murphy scored or saved against Wexford? Do you remember saying he was kind of falling back and it helped him that he was falling back and went low, because if it goes to his left or right anymore, that's not a save. Same with McCarthy. If he just puts it a bit more to his left or right, that's a goal. But it's just, it's in the lovely like hurl distance where he holds it. So the most impressive part about that was he's just simple hand-eye coordination reaction time. But at that time, it was a critical moment. And then what drives goalkeepers cracks is when you actually do something very difficult, save a ball that hard, and you don't have cover, and the rebound goes in. You know, that's where Jimmy Burns pulled off heroics as well. Like, so from that perspective, that's kind of a real team effort, which we've seen from Limerick in years previous, that if there's any sign of danger at all, they get back towards the goal and get danger out. So quite a great save, but then Jimmy Burns with the clearance, and then to win a free after that, you know, that's just, that lifts the team.
To take us back to, I suppose, the wider view on all this, I had noticed ML89 had come in very early with one of the comments. So, underwhelming weekend of provincial finals. Dublin have never backed up a win versus Galway, never win a game after beating them. How many times can Lone be shown up tactically and inability to change mid-game? So, look, I think we're fairly well agreed on the Dublin side of things, how badly they played, and we'll get to that in a moment. But an inability to change mid-game, Murph, or showing up tactically. Were Clare beaten on the line today? Is that a fair comment?
No, I just think they were beaten all over today. As I was saying earlier, I just never got the impression that there was huge energy off Clare today. We didn't see that kind of passion, that aggression that we've seen in previous performances. And when that's there, that accounts for a lot of other mistakes or a lot of other things that may appear to be tactical on the field. Like the wide straight away, you got the impression that, okay, you have the wind here, starting to hit a few wides, that this is between the ears somewhere. Like there's something not off in the head today. And then, you know, there were just balls going astray. They were getting caught in a few tackles, getting turned over as well. Granted, great Limerick work rate, but they were getting turned over. There's quite a few things that were symptomatic of just not being at the races. You could probably point more to similar to the Clare performance against Kilkenny 2 years ago in the Ireland semi-final, where it was just an overall performance not there. I don't think Brian Nolan could have changed a whole lot on the line by introducing players that would have changed it, or even tactically. I think the players on the field reverted away from the game that they were playing. And I mentioned it there 5 minutes ago, just that once they were under pressure, as opposed to working the ball through the lines, which they actually did quite well at really good periods and carrying the ball, they started to strike from their own 45. And again, it just comes back to that when they were playing against the wind, like particularly against the wind, you can't try and strike long ball because it hangs perfectly for a defender. Defender comes up and eats it alive. Whereas whatever, let's say with the wind, if you want to go striking a few balls from the 45 and they land inside in the 14 and it's dangerous, brilliant. But if you're on your own 45 and you're staring down a Limerick defence that are kind of, you know, they have cover back there, well, you want to carry that ball up. And like you have your Dermot Ryans, you have your David Fitzgeralds, all these lads, David McInerney's, you have all them that have the ability, but it's a little bit more of mental fatigue and obviously physical fatigue as well, that you're starting to strike the balls because you've just been worn down a small bit by Limerick. So I wouldn't be too hard on Brian Lone in this situation. You know, maybe one or two substitutions might have changed it, but any time Clare came anywhere close to Limerick, Limerick pushed them back and Limerick responded. So it always looked like that. Limerick looked like they were in maybe fourth gear today, not even fifth. It just looked like that they were doing enough. They were getting really good scores. And they'll be really happy with their tackling and how they got involved with Clare. But I wouldn't be too hard on Brian Lone in this situation. I never got a feeling that it was something tactically that Brian Lone wasn't doing. It was the reason that they didn't win this game. I just felt it was the application of the game plan that they actually had.
The biggest thing that's going to happen now is for the Clare public and the board as well. What Brian Lone does from now until the championship end will dictate whether or which he keeps his position at the end of the year. Now, that's heavy for me to say. But he's coming at the end of his fifth year, is it? I think it's his fifth year.
Yeah.
So he's coming at the end of his fifth year, and if he is now charged with finding the answer. So right now he's the last four years with no answer. So if he can't find the answer and they bow out in similar fashion that they've done in the last 3 or 4 years, he's under pressure. Because right now you see what you're dealing with, a Limerick team and backroom team that are professional. They're professional people, academics, professional in their fields. You know, you've intertwined professionals coming together. And then versus, you know, really and truly, hands up, we're all amateurs. So like Paul Kinnerk is a professional in his field, Carolyn Curler is a professional, and what they've done with this Limerick team is unreal. And like you mentioned one there about the David Reedy free he won in Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. You know, that same scenario, let's say, that scenario, there was 11 Clare lads inside their own 45. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Fitzgerald had no choice but to take off running with it. That's rare you see that happen in Limerick. Limerick are always systematic. And how many times do you see Limerick lads running at different angles with support balls? Like, how many times have you seen Willard Donahue to Declan Hannan to Kyle Hayes, Colin O'Neill, and off we go? You know, it's just so well structured and coached that, like, how is Brian Lohan going to find the answer? And that's a question for everyone else. How do you break this team down? And that's what I look at when they go to Croke Park. You know, they just have this off to a tee, expansive place, expansive pitch, and they're going to take live. They're going to get better.
Yeah.
That's reality. They're going to get better. We've often said the place to catch them, is in Munster. If you don't catch them there, I'm afraid to say, lads, your chances actually get slimmer as the championship goes on.
Mm. Yeah.
A reasonable point here, Murph, from One Trick Pony. I don't know if you ever got caught up in this. I know Limerick and Waterford did with the bales of hay there a couple of years ago as well. But the big issue today, lads, the game was the half-hour delay. Obviously, far from ideal for the players. I mean, I don't know how you'd feel if you've gone out on your warm-up and then kind of 15 minutes beforehand you're told that you have to go back into the dressing room and wait the half hour. You've said straight away, Murph, non-issue for you?
No, well, it's happened to us before. You go and you play an All-Ireland quarter-final. I think we played Limerick in Thurles in 2012 after Galway beat us in Leinster final, and I think Wexford were playing maybe Clare or something before it. They go to extra time. You now have to wait back in the dressing room. You were about to head out the tunnel. They say, no, go back in. You go back in. Whether you were on the pitch about to do your warm-up or whether you were told to go back in, you're mentally have a target on, we're going out here now, 20 minutes, half an hour before throw-in, and this is it. And now you have to delay everything by half an hour. I'd say it's happened players several times during their career, but it happened. It's the same for both sides. I mean, Clare can't, and I'm not saying that Clare are saying this, but Clare can't say that a half-hour delay affected them more than it affected Limerick. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And plenty of times, I can remember it happening in Croke Park as well, where I think like minor games went to extra time or something like this, but there was a delay anyway, and we had to hold on an extra half hour. So, like this, it's the first time I've seen it happen because of a generator, but it's not the first time even I've experienced it because of other issues where you're playing a doubleheader in Thurles and a draw makes it knock on half an hour. No, it's not. And the other thing is, like we said, if it was a half hour delay that the Clare bus couldn't get into Thurles, you'd say, well, that affects Clare. This affects both teams. So you can't say anything about that.
Hmm. Do you have any experience of it, Skell?
I have experience from actually not from a power failure, Will, but actually from adverse weather conditions whereby there were such bad hailstones one day that we had to remain inside indoors.
Salt Hill, surely.
It was in Galway, yeah. For 15 or 20 minutes. But like that, like...
It was July.
Exactly. Yeah, there was a concert on after. But I think that it's the same principle for both teams. They're both being affected in the same manner. It's just like whether, you know, even if in club games the referee is late, all these minor things that in my book are just completely irrelevant. There's stuff you can't control. So if you can't control it, don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. Just get on with it.
Hmm. I'm loving that comment there from Fuel. Load shedding and Tip. What's the world coming to? Tip and Cape Town have something in common where they load shed every so often.
Air and water as well.
You can see there's lots of comments coming in about the Clare management. So I just want to play a little bit of Brian Lowen here talking to Tommy Rooney just a few minutes ago about his thoughts. So here's what Brian Lowen said about where it went wrong for Clare this afternoon.
I don't think we converted as what we should have converted. I think our scoring efficiency was down at around 60%, which isn't good enough. 120 isn't good enough to win these big games. Not now. It might have been good enough 20 years ago, but it's not now. So that's an area that we'll have to work on. And you know, you'd have to say that their shooting efficiency and their scoring efficiency was a lot better than ours. You know, we have to get up to that pitch, and if you don't, you won't win the big games.
Yeah, so there you go. That's Brian Lowen's taking it. Richard here again has stuck up about the 53-man backroom team. I did a literal double take when Declan Hannan said that. I thought nothing of, we've got 36 lads, we're going again, let's get the next 4 weeks right and all that type of stuff. And then he goes, I have to thank our backroom team, 53 people in it.
Hmm.
53 people, Murph. Did Kilkenny ever have anything near 50 people in the record? Their own bus.
I think including the management, I think we had probably 10 maybe. But that's like, I would be very curious just to know, what is that 53? What do they do? I'm sure they all have very valid jobs and great qualifications, but just genuinely don't. I can't figure out where 53 come from. Like, I mean, even if you have stats and analysis,
could be maximum.
Yeah, it would be a huge number for the huge. Yeah. I think we had two at most times. And I'm not saying we were right or wrong, but I'm just saying that where do you put everybody, 53? You know, I was surprised myself, you know. And like I'm saying, it's not saying it's a negative or a positive. I just can't get my head around 53. I've never seen anything like that. So it'd be really interesting to see what the breakdown is. And maybe the breakdown is somewhere, but it's just 52-seater bus and a push bike. That's the strength and conditioning fella has to go on the push bike. He's to put his money where his mouth is.
No one can say a word. Like, you can't say a word to them, because you know why? They're winning. And look, all you can say is with jealousy. You'd love to have it yourself. Like, we saw Tipperary 19 that took a photograph out in Croke Park with all the backroom team, and there was 23 of them. Mm. You know, and everyone's going, geez, 23, that's a ferocious amount of people. They won their Ireland, so you can't say a word about them. And the trouble is, these 53 people, they, you know, they're in, as I said, professional positions. They're probably getting expensed quite well. And if you have it, spend it. So it's tough shit for everyone else, lads. Everyone else catch up, I'm afraid.
The breakdown would be an interesting breakdown.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know how I feel about it. Look, you were both very recently out of the intercounty game. Like, the thing is, Gail, it does become an incredible arms race if the very, very top teams do this. And if you have a management team of that depth, and everyone else then feels that they have to spend crazy amounts of money if they're ever going to close it, I don't know. I mean, did Galway ever come anywhere near to that, Murph? I realise that Cody probably keeps the circle tight, but...
Jeez, I suppose when you talk about a backroom team, you know, I would include, obviously, logistics, you know, medical, physios, masseuse, you know, doctor. You include the, obviously, the analysis team, which generally occupy a good bit. There could be 6 to 8 positions. Then you have, obviously, the coaches and whatnot. But you'd never get to a stage where you pass out 20. And the thing is, you know, we hear about the end-of-year accounts, and I know I'm going financial here, about different county boards, and we hear, oh, we spent 1. Whatever million on two teams, right? I never believe Limerick when they say what they spent, because I believe there's more going on there in the background, because you can't have 53 people, you know what I mean, in positions, occupying roles with what they're spending. But I think it's something, if it gets out of control, 53 people's out of control, like, but if this... It's nearly like in the Dublin situation, where you don't hear anybody say, oh, split Dublin in two, this is getting too much. Like, where are we at now with Limerick? Are we going to split Limerick in two? And the funding is coming from obviously the source everyone knows. How much of a bearing does that have on their performance? I'd say it has a bit. Now, does it make Gary Checkerty put the ball in the net? No, it doesn't. It just doesn't. Like, you know, the players still have to do the work. They still have to go out and perform. They still have to, you know, remain injury-free, get tactics right, all this crack, right? So I know people are focused on 53 and to a degree somewhat right, but the players are occupying 98% of this bus. You know, so I see, the thing is, in professional sports, you can buy players and buy and buy and buy. In amateur sports, you've got your group. That's what you have. And you keep breeding your group. So I wouldn't put too much focus on the backroom team. I would just look at the group and with admiration and wonder how they keep doing it.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Some people will, I guarantee you, at some point go, these three lads are just bitter. Limerick are after doing six in a row. They might do five All-Irelands in a row. I'm just looking at the wider picture of how much it could potentially cost for counties to try and follow this. And I would agree, someone has looked up in the comments there that the Dublin footballers were probably the first ones out. I remember seeing the picture of Tip's backroom team in 2019, and it was 20 plus people in their backroom team. Like, this has been moving this way for a while. This isn't Limerick overnight. But even at that, 53 seemed like a crazy number to me when Hannon said it earlier on. So it just stands out. Let the debate continue. But none of us are taken away from what Limerick have done on the pitch over the last six, seven seasons. This is an interesting one from Gary, which you can both tackle. You can have it first, Murph. Is that Clare done now? Can they mentally recover from another final defeat? They won't beat the Cats. That's an opinion, I suppose. A lot of the older heads will move on, I feel. Limerick are now unstoppable. Drive for five is on.
Did you get there first?
They do. Yeah. Probably going to play Wexford. It's very unlikely that Wexford are going to lose to Laois and Portlaoise next weekend.
Are you saying this for Clare? For Clare. I'm never too quick to judge a team on one game either. I know they looked a bit lackluster against Tipperary. That final game of the Munster or the round robin can often be that sort of way as well. But potentially, I think this could actually be a dangerous place for anybody facing Clare going forward, because they kind of have a sting in the tail now. And maybe it could be something like they were going into All-Ireland semi-finals the last few years, getting a pat in the back. You know, kicking the arse mightn't be bad either going into an All-Ireland semi-final. So I'm very quick to kind of say, like, if you go back 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, when Dublin put in the performance against Galway, one game, people were going, this Dublin team, unbelievable. There was people, you know, bigging up the players big time. We move forward one game, and now they're, you know, people are absolutely giving them an awful roasting at the moment. This is one game for Clare. They'll be very disappointed with the performance. But if you look at, like, David Fitzgerald, Tony Kelly, Shane O'Donnell, like, all the calibre players, Dermot Ryan, that they have, they have one bad game today. They'll be disappointed. Yeah, it's an opportunity missed. But they go in to play a game, and they get back into an All-Ireland semi-final, and they're maybe smarting after the last 2 years playing Kilkenny. They're maybe hurting a small bit that people will start writing them off. They put in one good performance in 70 minutes. All you have to do is look at Cork in 2021 against Kilkenny. You know, people were writing them off against Kilkenny, and they went and got into an All-Ireland final. Like, at the end of the day, if they're getting into an All-Ireland final, nobody will be saying any of this. And everybody will be saying, aren't they great lads again? It'll swing right back around. So I just think one game, I don't buy any of that crap. Even this crack of people talking about Brian Lowen and stuff, just don't buy any of that at the moment. I think, to be honest, if anything, this could be a very dangerous position. Like, Tony Kelly didn't hit any sort of real standards today. If he hits higher standards, and this Clare bring their performances back to where they were, let's say, at the end of the league, even against Limerick for the first 60 minutes in Ennis, all those performances, sure, like, you know, those are the ones you mark them on. I don't think you mark them too much on today. It certainly is a backward step today, absolutely. Mm. But I think they have the games in front of them now to go and rectify it. And particularly if they come to an All-Ireland semi-final and people think that, they won't. It'll be a carbon copy of last year's. I think that could be the rock a team perishes on, because they have savage talent still within their team. And one game doesn't decide what a team is.
Yeah. Look, Skell, this is different to what happened since the league final. Or even we were talking with Pods last week about maybe since the league semi-final. They go out and bash Tipperary and then faded a bit in the league final, and kind of Kilkenny got back into it. And there were fade-outs against Limerick and a few of the other Munster games. Today didn't really feel like that, did it?
No, today felt like they were kind of comprehensively beaten. I suppose the most contested element of the game was probably the first, 10 or 12 minutes. And after that, then it became one-way traffic for Limerick. Now, it's easy for me to say one-way traffic, because I'm looking at it from a different kind of scope. Some people say, it was a tighter game than that, and they get the back, and they were draw at halftime, etc. But there was a distance between these two teams. Like, I'm talking about a structural distance, quality, personnel, how they executed. And you have to look at the way Limerick played, and they were able to withstand injuries for lads they were missing, and also have Lynch play, I suppose, not as good as his regular standards. Let's call it poor for what it is, right? And Gallan didn't play hectic either. Tom Morrissey had an okay impact, and then still they go and they route Clare. I just think their defensive setup from their numbers 2 to 7 is just awesome. And like, Declan Hannon he's a Rolls Royce player, like, and he just knows the role of the six. We were speaking about John Conlon, if you remember last week, Will, about how important his role to be. Like, look at the way Declan Hannon performed. His second point today was on the opposition 65. He knows just when to move up, when to move back. you know, if a ball goes into the Limerick full back line, who's the first out ball? It's always Declan Hannan. So for him to pop up in the right position and support, he just knows how to play the sixth position, which is crucial to Limerick like performance. So I think Clare, I'd be on the side of you, but so more like I'm looking at Clare thinking, just don't overreact. You know, I would kind of project forward and go, right, if the, in the event Clare don't, you know, if they peter out of the championship, will Brian Lohan be under pressure? In my mind, he will be. But I'm not going to say they're going to get knocked out next round. They have work to do, don't get me wrong, but they have work to do to get back to where Kilkenny are at the moment. But they're not a dead team. Like, they won the league on merit. You know, they've been probably the second or third best team in the championship to date. You know, I put Cork up in that bracket now as well for what they've produced. So it's not as if they're dead and buried. And like, you know yourself, Murph, when you got beaten, what's the first thing you want to do? Get back out and play again.
Yeah.
Get back out there and play again, because you're like, this is not the way we want to perform. They're not happy. Some of them didn't play well. So be it. So I can guarantee you that dressing room this evening was obviously disappointed, but couldn't wait to get back on the horse again.
Yeah. Mm.
On the Declan Hannan point, Sean Sheen was in contact earlier, said, is they should target Declan Hannan, the most lazy punditry now in sport? Ye aren't guilty. He's been nothing but exceptional for years and was again today. Titanic at six. I see him as an all-time great.
But when you say target, someone tell me how. So if you say, oh, we should target Declan Hannan, how are we going to target him? Are you going to run at him? Are you going to pull him out? There's never an answer with it, like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I said about John Connan, I'm saying pull him out. Do you know what I mean? Get him going back up and down because of, obviously, the physical demands in your back, and get him away from his full back line because the Clare full back line, for me, are suspect. So if you don't allow Connan to sit back, you pull him out. So when I hear about Declan Hannan, I think they look at Declan Hannan and maybe think he's lost the art. Jeez, he didn't look at today, lads.
Jesus, no. He was awesome today. I know Burns, three of them were frees, and he's dropping a few of them short at the moment, but like, it's four from play between Hannan and Hayes, and then three from Dermot Burns. So their half-back line contributed 7 points across the game, which is an excellent return again from Limerick today. What do you find suspect about that Clare half-back line? I'm not going to let that go there.
No, I said full-back line.
Oh, full-back line, sorry. Yeah, what do you find suspect about?
Just one-to-one contest. I think when you look at the Limerick full-back line, their one-to-one contest ability is unreal. I'm talking about Barry Nash, Mike Casey, Sean Finney, put him in there, Dan Morrissey. Their ability to win their own contest is fabulous. For me, I think the Clare full-back line have to result to sometimes fouling or over-fouling. Like, you look at Shane O'Brien, probably second. Is this his first championship start, lads? Am I wrong there? Today?
I'd say it's first.
Let's say first championship start. Yeah. 8 out of 8 on Adam Hogan. 8 out of 8. He got in the first 8 balls. Like, that's what you're talking about, a kid, like 19 years old or 20 years old. You know, that shouldn't happen. And then, you know, we would have said Cleary gets under pressure, he fouls. That's what happens today. Like, he was the Lang got 2 from play and he fouled, you know, 4 times. That's 6 points less from there. Shane O'Brien got 2 more, fouled twice more again. You know, it's just, I think if Clare is successful, they've got to cover the full back line. And if you then have to go cover a line, another line suffers. Do you know what I'm saying? Whereas the Limerick lads can cater their own problems. They can take on their own battles. I think Barry Nash did a really good task today of nearly man-marking Shane Dolan for large periods of the game, as well as Mike Casey as well at times. So there's no fear of leaving them semi-isolated, if you like. There's enough capability in their own corners. Yeah.
Well, here's one for you, Murph, related to that, coming from James Moylan. Did Limerick break a tradition and get Barry Nash to just man-mark Shane O'Donnell out of the game today?
Break a tradition in that that's not like Limerick, is it?
Well, I presume it's Limerick. We've always talked about them being more systematic as opposed to putting a man marker necessarily on a danger man.
I don't think Limerick have a hard and fast rule to say that they don't target anyone and don't man mark someone. Like, I think Limerick just do what's necessary. And if they have identified, and like, you look at a lot of the games so far where Clare have gotten a lot of balls where if it wasn't Shane O'Donnell there, they wouldn't have won it. Shane O'Donnell makes the ball stick in a way that other players don't make it stick. And he's tricky. Like, look at his first score today. Like, I mean, it was just a remarkable score. And he's very tricky that way. So I just think the Limerick management looked and said, you know, Barry Nash is our man there. Like, you know, he's very tight, very tidy, has great legs, you know, doesn't get turned. Let's put him on him there. And If Clare had a full forward line of three lads where you're just going, all those lads are three Shane O'Donnells. They just make the ball stick. They're all dangerous. You have your work cut out for you then, because lads just have to stick to the man. But if you look and go, Shane O'Donnell has a higher value here in terms of stopping him than the other two lads in the corners. Great players, yeah, absolutely. But if you stop Shane O'Donnell, you most likely stop Clare having that spark in the forward line where that he can make a ball stick and runners come off the shoulder. If you just kill that ball dead and you have a lad marking him that's well capable of doing that, that actually stops a lot of opportunities for Clare. So I completely understand. And I don't ever believe that a team goes, well, this is something we don't go man marking in terms of we don't target anyone. Like, I don't think any team with any great integrity says that. I think teams just go, even Limerick say, we do what's necessary. And if necessary means putting Dan Morrissey on him or putting Barry Nash on him, well, that's what we do, you know. And Barry Nash, if you look at him today, was on him. They moved Mike Casey and they put Barry Nash on him. Barry Nash still hurled his own game. He was still on a huge amount of balls. So I think they identified what Barry Nash would bring to marking, would bring to marking Shane O'Donnell. And they said, well, actually, he can not only mark him, but still go and hurl his own game. So I just don't believe that, you know, this thing of saying that, oh, Limerick just don't do that. They'll do what's necessary. And that's the bottom line.
Nice to people there, obviously, putting in comments about the Bull O'Brien and his first start today. And I spotted this on Crack of the Ash earlier on today. I'm loving some of the nicknames we've had over the last couple of weekends. So Offaly had a goal from the Crazy Frog last week in Thurles. Now we've got the Bull, but it's a bit more old school. We had Picky Marr, of course, at the weekend playing for Leash as well. But here was maybe a slightly merry Darragh Donovan last year predicting what was going to happen today.
We've boys coming behind us. They're ready to go. The Bull O'Brien here.
Yeah.
When this man gets going, there will be no stopping him. I'm telling you here now, this man is going to be one of the fucking all-time greats. He's a legend. He's a legend. He's 18 years of age, coming to our panel this year. And, like, see these boys here, right? Shane O'Brien, Adam English, Jimmy Quilty, and Matt Quinlan. The good lads. See that man there? The ball!
I do quite enjoy, and credit to Crack of the Ash, who also put the subtitles on there, you know, shouts of encouragement is how it finishes up there. Yeah, look, I think in fairness now, if Dara was to come along with the swear jar after that, we'd probably fund the trip to Limerick on the 19th as well. But there you go, lads. It's one of the things, Murph, we talked about the injuries they've had. We wondered at a point when Bo Casey and Flanagan were injured, what's that going to do with the inside forward line? Because you don't want to move O'Neill around from where things are going well. You put the faith in the young lad to go into the full forward line, and he puts in a really good performance today.
Yeah, well, he came on the last game for Flanagan. I'm fairly sure that was the sub that came on, and great game. I think I had him down for 3 points during that game, maybe. But he had a really, really good game, really effective. And we've often mentioned that John Kiely, I fully believe, just gives chances to people who are hurling well in front of him. And he just, you know, you have to give that. Like, Flanagan is presumably still out with an injury at the moment. And why wouldn't you go with Shane O'Brien? Like, I mean, when he was put into a really tough game, he performed really well in the last round of the Munster. So why not give him a chance in Munster? And here we are. Now they're after unrooting another player. Now, Darragh Donovan there, any lads, I'm sure they've seen a lot of him in training, and they could have told you a year ago this was going to happen. But for the rest of us watching on, they've now unearthed another string to their bow, another different type, not say different type of player, but you could say that he looks like he's not of the same cast of a Seamus Flanagan or something like that. Maybe he's a bit more of a Graham Mulcahy, Peter Casey, someone like that. You know, we have to see a bit more of him to see. But, you know, today, like Scott was saying, like eight out of eight on Adam Hogan. And like Adam Hogan had a great game, let's say, on Owen Cody in the league final. So, like, for a young fella like that to go in a Munster Championship final, like, it's a great performance. And I think John Kiely is fully, he's fully deserved in his selection of him today.
Shane Powers' comment here, which you can take up, Skell. What happens when Flanagan is back fit again? Surely you can't drop Shane O'Brien after today's performance.
His performance today has been excellent, but I suppose Shane Flanagan over the last number of years has been excellent. And like, we can't discount what he's done. I don't mean to say he should be judged on past performances, like, but what he's done in the past has been excellent. He's always been a man for the big day. Like, the last Munster final he pledged was the year before last. Was he get 7 points in play? Something like that?
Yeah.
That should be the previous. Like, so it's within him as well. And, like, look, what happens when lads come along in their first year, they're relatively unknown. It's hard for opposition people to nearly pre-plan for them. They don't get pre-planned for because they're not as effective as the Glans or the Cases or whatever. But his day will come too. But, like, in fairness to Shane O'Brien, I was actually wondering why Podge was calling him the Bull. I was saying, he's not that big, is he? This is what I was saying in my head, you know, why would he call the Bull? Then I saw him out in front of Hogan, and I was like, all right, maybe he deserves the name. Like, to be like, Adam Hogan's no slouch. He's a strong fella. Like, and Shane O'Brien wasn't just winning the ball cleanly on the bounce out in front. He was winning it under contest and able to take it, no problem. So again, they've, as you said, Murph, they've unearthed another one. He's really effective himself, and Adam English have come into it, and it's like they've contributed. They're not being carried by the rest of the boys. When they come in, they contribute immediately, straight away. And it's interesting to see that when the final whistle blew, Hegarty was Hogan O'Brien, and he was kind of talking in his ear. Like, and can you imagine what it felt like for O'Brien to get that kind of... You can just imagine what Hegarty's saying to him. You know, like,
yeah,
you're helping us now, you're a huge part of this, etc. Like, and these, you know, these days are, you know, they can keep coming, etc. Like, he's only going to get better. And you put him into the wide open pitch of Croke Park on a, probably a drier day today, what's he going to do? Let's do more damage. So I think John Kiely, he's never failed his team selection. Like, we've never sat here in this podcast and questioned a decision he's made, not from memory anyway. Selection, whether he put Willard Dunhouse centre back or whatever he does, starting Keenan's corner forward, we've never said John Kiely made the wrong decision. They've always made the right decision. So whoever starts in that position, O'Brien and Flanagan, like, trust me, there's ample reason for it.
Yeah, a fair point brought up by Pa Moore as well. Big benefit to Limerick now will be that 4-week break, which allowed them to bring back Flanagan, Darragh Donovan, Sean Finn, and then Shane O'Brien, obviously, saying played very well for a 19-year-old today. But I suppose that's the thing, Murph, when you have this lengthy injury list at the moment, and maybe they've learned a bit more about their panel working their way to this semi-final, they won't mind at all sitting back and watching the other teams over the next 3 weekends and get these lads back to fitness again.
Not at all. I mean, it does make a difference to them. You look at last year, the year before, they were carrying injuries that were basically till the end of the year, where they're looking at 3 lads at the moment, most likely they'll come back over the 4 weeks. So it's a very strong position they're in. And going back to what lads were saying there about Shane O'Brien or Flanagan, like, again, it still comes back to what Limerick need on the day. And Seamus Flanagan will still be ahead of Shane O'Brien. You know, he put in a good performance today, but... Like, when Limerick went and won the All-Ireland 2018, Seamus Flanagan was outstanding that year at full forward. I don't think he won an All-Star, but I remember just thinking, geez, he was really good and held that role really well. And again, yeah, you go back to Munster Finals where he scored 7 points. You go back and you see the Cork game, even though they were beaten, he got 3-3, I think it was, from play. So, like, there's loads of reason there. Seamus Flanagan's a big man as well. That's something you have to remember. Like, a big man at full forward, there's always a place for that in the game. So I think they look at it to say, it depends on what way they rejig it, but you can use Cathal O'Neill as an example. For so long, we've seen Cathal O'Neill put in great performances and still come in off the bench. Maybe you're talking, you know, 2 years ago. He's established himself now, but, you know, there's so many times there to Cathal O'Neill, we were watching great performance, but still couldn't get his way in. It took him time. I think the same will be said of Shane O'Brien. I think if Limerick have their full complement back, I think Seamus Flanagan still starts ahead of him. And that's just a case of O'Brien just being blooded and earning his time there. And it's not a case of that, regardless of his performances, he won't start. It's just a case that Seamus Flanagan, let's not forget, is a serious player and has been tested in a lot of All-Ireland finals and Munster finals. So it's not as simple as play one good game, like what Brian would have said to us. I remember Brian said it to me before, 2 good games in my first year, and he just said, look, 2 swallows don't make a summer. Like, doesn't mean you're starting the next day. So I just think that 1 swallow definitely doesn't make a summer. So, you know.
Did Brian Cody ever give you a compliment over your years? Because it seemed every single time it was, Murphy, keep your feet in the ground here.
No, he did. He did, yeah. Yeah, no, he definitely. I always remember. But, like, this is the thing. He used it in
once,
a way where
I always,
like,
remember.
Yeah. He said, well done. He said, well done. No, I remember we played a Leinster final, and after the game, I just had a really solid game. I can't remember what it was. But it was maybe around 2014 or 15 or something. And I just picked up a lot of ball, and he just said, it was something different. Like, he just said, you know, well done. That was really good today. But it was a case of, like, his words were currency. Like, I mean, he didn't just... You earned your compliment, like, if we were getting it. So it was a case that he wasn't just patting you on the back for the sake of patting you on the back. It was a case of, they should go through a brick wall and, well done, that was good. But once he said it, sure, that was huge, you know.
Did he ever tell you, Murph, to lower the blade in some lead?
I don't think so. No,
he's retired. He probably won't listen to this, so you can speak freely.
No. Like, what Brian would have always said to me was just about being out in front. Like, he'd just kind of say to you, like, if you're out in front, it doesn't matter who you're marking. Like, so this would have always been something he echoed. Like, I think Murph, if he
come
was,
on, come on, give me, no, give no, me genuine, the answer I'm looking for here.
No, genuine. I know timber this lad.
Come on, tell us.
No, he never did that. Because I think if he said that to you, he would have, it would have seemed as if he didn't think you were a good enough hurler to actually mark the lad you're marking. I genuinely believe that if he thought you were going out there just to mash a fellow up, that you couldn't out hurl him. But Brian's attitude always to us was that if any one of us, if you place your potential on the day, you can beat whoever's in front of you. And that was always the mantra of him. I never remember him And I don't think it's his style. Where I know people might think it's the cliche style of him, he never said that, or I've never even heard him say that, go out and level a fella. Like, you know, might have happened, but he didn't tell us to do it. Like.
The important question coming in here from Jack Greenwood on Twitter: what is Skehill drinking at the moment?
Drinking summer fruits, my buddy.
Ah.
I was with a high Orchard Thieves glass, which drives me crazy because they don't fit in the dishwasher.
The manual dishwasher.
Yeah, yeah. The wife, is it?
I was implying yourself, but there you go.
You know what club milk's for you this evening? Whatever chance you had
in the last 6 months, since Christmas.
The Christmas biscuits are firmly locked away now at this point when she sees this. Shane Power, and there has been a few comments about Lynch, so you boys can take this one. Can you talk about Keane Lynch? Doesn't look himself at all. Realistically, is he really adding a Limerick right now? Are they carrying him a little bit? Surely someone else deserves a chance.
No, not so.
Come on, no. He's not, you know, Grace just texts me, cheeky fucker. Love you. Sorry. Let's get back to business quickly. I honestly don't think so. Like, I think, again, people can judge Keane Lynch and what he's produced at the absolute max of his time and his performance. And if sometimes people can be guilty of, you know, if he doesn't reproduce that day in, day out, is he dropping off? Is he getting slow? He's nearly hyper-analyzed, you know, to a critical degree, you know. And I don't think he's given the same slack as others, to be honest. So, like, did he play to his top today? No, he didn't. But that doesn't say he's going to play unreal, not going to play unreal the next day. Yeah. Like, he's not a detriment to his team. He's still contributing. He's just not contributing 5 points from play and 10 assists. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like, I don't think it's a worry for John Kiely. I don't think it's a worry for Limerick. I think he's always going to be starting on the team. I think he's multifaceted. He can play in any position in from number 8 to number 15. So, like, he's always in my team.
Like, I think I fully agree with you. Like, I think there's a few players. It's not a case that they just keep their place in the team regardless. That's not how it works. But, like, a performance, a 5 out of 10 performance by Keane Lynch is probably a 7 or 8 out of 10 by your average GA player. Like, what he gets through and the standards that we see from him is completely different to other players. And I only have to think back of, I think it was maybe last year, maybe the year before, Garrod Hegarty had a patchy kind of a season for up until the Munster final. People were kind of questioning, last year. They were saying, like, you know, will he stay in the team? Will someone else come in? Will Cathal O'Neill come in or whoever? All-Ireland semi-final and final, he was absolutely outstanding. And it's just, that's the thing. And that's what you're dealing with like Keane Lynch. Like, Keane Lynch would have taken off today, you know, okay, not one of, by his own standards, better days. He opens up an All-Ireland semi-final. And, like, let's say a team goes and they go after Garrod Hegarty the next day or whatever, and suddenly Keane Lynch finds himself on balls. And sure, it's game over again, you know. So, again, one game by his own standards a bit off, but Jesus Christ, you can't leave him out of the team.
No.
Kevin, I appreciate your comment here. Lads, I'm sick of telling you it's all over. Forget talk of 5 in a row. It's going to be 6 All-Irelands. We wouldn't have much of a podcast if we just declared and went, you know what, Limerick were very good today. Don't even bother watching the semi-final. Come back in, maybe casually watch the final. But it's next year. The 6 in a row is what's really important. I think we'd be out of business pretty quickly if we took that approach. And teams get caught out. Empires come to an end.
Kerry wrote a song in 82, so an awfully came along. So you never know. Until the year's over, you don't know. And the other thing we haven't talked about, like, is, you know, Cork are still there, the team that bet Limerick in the championship so far. Like, there's lots of things can happen. Like, obviously, we're all saying that Limerick are out in front at the moment. But there is a way to go yet, you know, and Limerick aren't flawless either at the moment. They're absolutely outstanding, they're excellent, but they're not without their chinks in the armour at the moment. So, look, you don't know until the end of the year is over, but we all know who the favourites are.
Yeah, here's one for you, Skell. A few people question Quilligan for the Hegarty goal. One trick pony, do Clare need to change their keeper now for the next game?
Above all positions, change your keeper mid-championship is the biggest call of the ball for me. That has a huge systematic bearing on everything, on with the relationship with your backs, on your puck-off strategy, open play deliveries, you name it, lads. So, excuse me, I wouldn't change him. Like, yes, can I critique him for the goal? Of course I can. You never go out to the two position and cross the field, you know, against the breeze, because she's going to land right in the middle where Declan Hannan and or Jimmy Burns are. That's an error. You know, what needs to be done against the breeze is you play a short game and try and move it up. So find a wing back, find someone in midfield, etc., and go along. So I understand how the error happened. It was the cause of the goal. Like, I was always told as a young fella, if you're going to come, So even if you think it's a bad decision, just go for it. So if you say I'm going, just go balls out. And if it gets past you, it gets past you. So he kind of hesitated for the Hegarty goal. Yeah. But other than that, like, I can't critique him too much. See, what happens is in the goal is they make one error. You know, and they are electric goal. Fair enough, right? But it wasn't the losing the game. Certainly was not. And the puckouts, sometimes people can look at keepers and go, oh, he chose to put the puck out here. He chose to put it there. You know, really and truly, it's what you're being offered as well. That's why I look at Limerick. And there was a high behind view at one stage when it was Nicky had the ball in his hand for a puck out, and you could see the movement of the forwards up the pitch. And it was just class. And it was like, you'd be jealous that you want that for every team you're part of. And was Quilligan getting that? No, he wasn't. Simple as that. So you can't say he was choosing to put the ball here or there. It was simply put, I don't think he was getting the option. So you can critique the goalie, and rightfully so, for the goal. But other than that, I don't think you'd be too harsh on him. And then people have a short memory. Look back to last year when they played Tipperary in the first round. How did that go?
Yeah.
First round championship. They conceded 3 whoppers of goals because they changed their keeper. So it's not to be all end all. Like, he's been good for Clare, you know, for the last number of years. Stick with him. And the bad days, stick with him. And the good days, keep with him.
All right. This nicely brings around to the other game, because obviously it was a bit of a crapshoot for Kilkenny. But Niall Callanan even. Askell, is this a reflection of how far down goal we have gone when you see the Cats whipping the Dubs?
Is this a reflection? Jeez. See, I never look at the round robin stage and you know, put value on said results until it gets to kind of crunch time. So that's why I did put value on the Dublin result against Galway. But the Galway draw against Kilkenny didn't value it at all. I said, this is the early days. It's a bit of shadow boxing. Bigger tests lie ahead. We are down the pecking order. No, I can't even sugarcoat it. I can't show my bias here whatsoever. We're not, at the moment, right, we're not in the top 6 or 7. So if you're going to ask me who's ahead of you, well, I have to have Limerick, Clare, Kilkenny. You know, I've Wexford, Cork. Even at this stage, Waterford ahead of us. So truthfully speaking, for what they showed in their championship, albeit they exited at the same time as we did. And Wexford ahead of us too. So we're down 7 or 8. That's reality. And they're saying, oh, if Galway were in the final yesterday, we'd have put up a bigger test, Kilkenny. No, we wouldn't. We wouldn't. We didn't show it through the round robin. We didn't show it once this year. We would have been clipped yesterday as well. So as I said, take your bait and move on. So we're getting ready for next year. Simple as that.
Murph, why were Dublin so ineffective at Croke Park then? Because we talked last week, obviously with Podge, about the fact that, you know, they'd shown so much. They took it right down the track. It took the own Cody goal at Parnell Park to decide it. And Dublin were incredibly effective at times running through Kilkenny. And then they go to Croke Park and that game felt over after 7 or 8 minutes.
I don't know. It's a very tough one to pull apart. Like, in Parnell Park for maybe 30 minutes or so, like, Dublin were good, but there was no real bite into them. And I remember the stage where it was nearly a line ball. Dublin fought hard for it. And suddenly the Dublin crowd rose and reacted, and the players reacted as well. And from then on, really, for the rest of the game, Dublin had a bite about them. And they thought, Jesus, we can go and win this game. And then they smelt blood in the water against Galway and were like, we can actually go down here and beat Galway. And if we beat Galway, then we're into a Leinster final. And it was really, you know, really positive stuff. And then I think it's kind of like a dog chasing a car, you know, the car stops and suddenly you have to win a Leinster final and they don't know what to do. Like, you know, as in they arrived into a Leinster final and it was like, oh, Jesus, we're here now. What do we actually do? And there was so much went wrong. I mean, you could say it was the application of the game plan, but the game plan in itself, like, Skehill, you sent a picture into our WhatsApp there during the game. But like, Adrian Mullen was on the ball. And there was like a flat kind of 4 across the half back line. Yeah. None of them near Adrian Mullen. There was even players running a different direction. They could have got to Adrian Mullen potentially, but they were actually running away from Adrian Mullen. So they didn't really know what they were at. And there was times during the game where I could see Dublin players and they had their hands out. Like, Kilkenny were just cutting through them. They didn't wait to see what Dublin were going to bring. And then when they saw what Dublin were bringing, they didn't drop their tempo. They just kept going. And like, this game's realistically over after 15, 20 minutes because I know during the league, and you nearly forget about it because the league is, you know, lots of things can happen in the league. But Kilkenny were up by 15 points and end up drawing the game. Yeah, that was never going to happen yesterday because it just looked like you looked at Dublin yesterday and kind of went, how did they get to the Leinster final, really? And I think, to be honest, like, Dublin's path to the Leinster final was very much, you know, maybe catching Wexford out in Wexford Park, down by 6 points a few minutes ago, getting 2 goals, drawing, going, Jesus, brilliant. Kind of getting a few results after that then that puts him in a good position. And that was coincided with Galway having a faltering kind of a Leinster championship. So you can maybe get a false positive that Dublin took a huge leap forward. They didn't really. They in each individual game probably approached it quite well, and you know, got the results they needed to get. But like, you look at the team yesterday, to be honest, like 15 and 15, you look man for man, they didn't have the quality Kilkenny had either. You know, like there was times there where Kilkenny were striking long balls. And that's another thing, like, you know, Kilkenny got away, not to say they got away with, but they did things yesterday that they could get away with because Dublin just weren't good man on man against Kilkenny. Kilkenny struck long balls in.
They poked some outrageous wides as well, Murph. Like, you know, kind of Hollywood Dublin shooting in the second half. No, Kilkenny even as well.
Yeah. Kilkenny started striking long ball. Like, I mean, it wasn't a good test for Kilkenny to get ready for an All-Ireland semi-final. Like, Kilkenny would be happy, but like, truth be told, you would have been better. We can say at one side they'll come through it and they'll become, they're unscathed. Keane Kenny with a little bit of a knock, Mikey Carey with a bit of a knock, but other than that, clean bit of health. But the other side is, like, Kilkenny would have really liked to have been tested there yesterday. You know, come away winning by 4 or 5 points would be the ideal margin. You've been tested. You know, you got over the line and you really saw out the victory. Great. That didn't really do any good for Kilkenny, you know, and they'll make no bones about that. And Derek Ling's first job will be to say, look at lads, yeah, great win, but the opposition were poor as well. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. And you'll have to manage the team that way as well. So Kilkenny started striking wide, but I think, to be honest, sure, it turned into a training session. Like, there's no point in saying anything else about it. It turned into a training session. And when you're training, sometimes you just start taking shots and you start hitting wides. But I mean, they're up by
a session, wouldn't you?
I'm sorry?
If that happened in training, Murphy, stop it.
Oh, you'd stop it. Oh, gee, you'd stop it after 10 minutes if it was like that. But yeah, like, so, I mean, like, Kilkenny hit some crazy wides. Yeah, but like, they were up by 15 points at half time. Like, it turned into a duck shoot after that. So I wouldn't have been disappointed. Like, you know, obviously, you couldn't even take a whole lot from the game, to be honest, either.
Murph, can I ask you a question? Do you think Dublin adopted a completely zonal approach?
It looked completely zoned. It looked.
Massey Cohen got a point there in the end of the first half, right? And there was 4 Dublin lads in the half back line. Nobody near him. He's outside the half back line.
Yeah, it didn't look like they had a man for man market.
They adopted the zone approach and like, okay, someone else should be taking Massey. It should be one of the wing forwards or midfielders, not us. And they all stood back. And the one I sent in about Adrian Mullen, I couldn't believe that. It was like rugby. 4 Kilkenny lads, 4 Dublin lads, and no one within an arse's war of Mullen. The ref was slightly closer.
To
Dublin fella. So yeah. I just think they adopted a completely zone approach, worried about the concession of goals, and thought they'd get the work in the middle. Didn't happen at all, which I'm very surprised because I thought Micheál would change that plan after literally 12, 13 minutes.
And if you look at it,
he'd win possession in 10 minutes left.
Yeah. They were just poking balls on top of him. But if you look at the Kilkenny poke out, so Dublin didn't stand up on Kilkenny at all. They sat right back. So you were saying to yourself then, right, Dublin are going to sit right back here now. Yeah. If Kilkenny poke a long ball, Dublin will mop it up. They've loads of players back. But there was one poke out, I think it was in the first half, maybe about 20 minutes. Owen Murphy poked it out to Hugh Lawler or someone, Richie Reid got it, whoever it was, carried it up, still struck it long, and Kilkenny lads still just won it cleanly. Like, so regardless, they were standing off them. They weren't even really getting stuck in at the far end then either. So it was just like, whatever the game plan was, it just wasn't working, and it was completely zonal. That was the only first thing I could see, is that this isn't man for man. There's nobody taking accountability because there's players just popping up in space and just striking balls standing. So it was just...
Owen Murphy got the ball into the play as fast as I've ever seen him.
Mm,
so they were catching Dublin. Dublin couldn't reset into their kind of a structure.
Yeah.
And so once Kilkenny got the ball in play, it was there was no high behind view. I'd love to have seen it, but I'd imagine the Kilkenny forwards were kind of switching laterally, which caused the sweeper to get completely, you know, ruinated. And like I said beforehand, the likes of Owen Cody, Massey Keown, John Donnelly, TJ Reid all can win the 1-to-1 battles. And if you land the ball down high on top of Kilkenny, where there's 3-on-3 or 4-on-4, you know, you've got a 60-70% chance of coming out with it.
Yeah.
The same can't be said the opposite side.
No, absolutely not. So, look, I mean, there's very few things you could picture with Dublin here to say, where did it go wrong? Like, there was everything kind of went wrong for them. And I think Kilkenny just played what was in front of them, you know, won Leinster final. But, like, you got the feeling Kilkenny felt they were winning this game after 15 minutes, which is, it's not good for anyone, particularly after a really good Leinster championship. It's not good to have the final finish that way.
Do you think, as a Kilkenny man, is that the reason, do you think Derek Ling knew Dublin would drop off? So was that why they picked Richie Reid at 6 and Deegan in midfield, so that Richie Reid could drop off and Deegan could fill in? And Adrian Mullen drop out, if you know what I mean. Adrian Mullen kind of played in midfield, really.
Yeah.
Is that why him and then Deegan back and then Reid back?
there was obviously an emphasis on the fact that Dublin were going to play a running game and Kilkenny were focused on that, and that if Dublin liked to carry the ball out past the first wave of players, so let's say if Kilkenny stood right up on them and they pushed up towards their 21, Dublin are really good at running the ball out through that. But if you look, Billy Ryan actually had a great game at turning over balls, like John Donnelly, Adrian Mullen, they're all exceptional, and but they were all tracking back. So Kilkenny were clearly going, okay, well, if Dublin carried the ball past our half forward line, our half forwards, you have to be getting back, our full forwards, you get back and turn that ball over. But where Dublin failed was that Dublin just didn't bring that game. So Kilkenny prepared for that. I think Kilkenny prepared for a real physical battle and a really strong Dublin running game, but that never materialised. And all that happened then was Kilkenny still went back hounding, turning over balls. But then when they turned over the ball and went to carry it up the field, they just had acres of space and they were looking up at lads popping it in. And like even Owen Cody's goal, like nobody came and really laid a hand on him. Both defenders got sold a dummy and Uncoody hung it up. Whereas a lad's coming through threatening a goal like that, you're at least going to come, one fella's going to come and meet him. But there was just complete misunderstanding of what Dublin were actually meant to do. And Kilkenny didn't wait around to see, okay, well, what are Dublin trying to do to us today? Kilkenny just played their own game, found themselves 10, 12, 15 points up, and Dublin were out of the game. And it was just a complete whitewash at that stage.
Yeah. Just addressing a few people saying there that Wexford could lose to Laois this weekend. I really don't think they will, because I think whoever's lost the Joe McDonagh Cup final has generally never really come close to the teams that they've played against. And I appreciate the Cork are the better team going into the preliminary quarterfinals with the form they've had. And I appreciate that Wexford lost to Antrim and that maybe Wexford can be a little bit inconsistent. I just don't see it happening. I can't see Laois being in the mental space after losing the final to win that game this weekend.
Wouldn't you say in fairness that they've got their warning already? They nearly need 1 year, you know, this one and the Westmeath one from previous. And their form was too, what they showed against Kilkenny, excuse me, down in Northern Park 2 weeks ago, is too good. Too good to waste, if you know what I'm saying. And there's a different energy about them now at the moment as well, currently. Like, if you rewind a month, you'd say something, a month ago, something different. But right now, they've got really good energy. And I think they might take a bit of value off yesterday's performance too. And see, they were actually closer to the pack than some might believe, you know, even nationally. Because I know for a fact, nationally, there's no county in Munster that would rate Wexford. That's a fact. And look, you can say what you like, that's the truth. They're looking at Wexford going, glad we have them. And I think Wexford are in a great opportunity. They have a super opportunity, especially the set of forwards they have.
They do. And like, you know, if go and beat Laois, play Clare. Like, you don't know. You don't, like, I know I said earlier that, like, this could be very dangerous for Clare. It could be, but they have to prove that. But like, you know, Wexford go and play Clare and Wexford have their backs up and they go, okay, oh, geez, we could be into the All-Ireland semi-final here. Like, that makes Wexford a dangerous team then as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that can happen off these results. And I don't think, yeah, absolutely, Wexford get up for Kilkenny. But in their own right, I think if Wexford have a look here and go, God, there's actually a decent path for us here to get to an All-Ireland semi-final. Geez, I think they could take it, you know?
Yeah. I think we'll do McDonagh Cup final probably in the members pod in more detail. But I will ask one of the questions because it was in very, very early on about Ben Keneally, who had a pretty good McDonagh Cup final yesterday. And this came in from Shane Power. Ben Keneally is some cornerback for Offaly. Maybe Murph can give his opinion on what makes him so good. Thought he was outstanding yesterday along with Charlie Mitchell. Yeah, I think Charlie Mitchell deserved to be player of the game. I definitely said it on Twitter yesterday that Charlie Mitchell was the Offaly under 20 captain last year when they got to the All-Ireland final. He's packed on a fair amount of lean muscle. His work rate, his attitude, his application, spot on in his first 2 years as a senior hurler. He had to plough a lone furrow at times when Offaly brought too many players back in that last 20 minutes. And Charlie Mitchell was oftentimes having to go up against one and two players, was winning the ball back. This year's under 20 captain, Dan Burke, as well. Incredible. Keelan Kiley was saying to us after the game, he didn't miss a minute of training all week, despite the Offaly under 20s going out, celebrating homecomings, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Dan Burke's attitude spot on. He won so many turnovers, worked so hard. When Laois's midfield were on top, particularly in the first half, Dan Burke was kind of tasked with going in to chase after Aidan Corby and chase after Paddy Purcell, who were two of the best players in the pitch. And Burke kept them winning turnovers. So he was incredible. Keneally had a good game. Yeah, a little bit,
Oh,
man. I mean, Podge was on about last week. I thought he was brilliant against Tipperary in the under-20 final as well. Aside from his goal, because he gets the headlines for that. But like you say, he's that guy who gets some ball, he links it up, he kind of makes it all happen. And a bit like Charlie, he's looking very good at senior level. When some of your lads are a little bit more raw, it's like Donald Shirley's been very good for Offaly at senior.
Yeah.
Saw Adam Screeny, got a great point, ends up in the video for that. But he was double marked and found it difficult at other times in the game. And that will happen to young players. But definitely Charlie Mitchell is the blueprint, I think, for these lads coming through at the moment. Keneally's obviously that bit older. We sent a video to Ben for his wedding a few weeks ago. He still contests how much Capitagal beat St. Rhinus by in the challenge game against Murphy, I think, or against Skell, but we'll leave that to one side.
Well, if he's that good, why is he in the forwards roughly?
Well, there you go. Maybe because he's a very good defender. What makes him a good defender, Murph?
Look, Ben Cannini, I think, just first of all, he's a really good all-round hurler. Like, we've seen him play at six as well, which shows that he's not limited to the cornerback position. Like, you know, so we've seen he's a wide-range hurler. He's one of these just very consistent players. I've seen him play numerous games now, and his ability to be involved in a game, regardless really of how awfully you're going, is I think is a fair testament to him and himself. He seems to be a very composed player, and just has a great way of disrupting play. Like, I mean, that's one of the best big things you look for a cornerback, is that how disruptive can you really be to a forward line when they're on the attack? And I think the fact that whether he's able to play at centre-back or cornerback, it shows you that if he's out at centre-back, which Offaly have often played him there, if he's out at centre-back, well, that's because he is, you know, very capable, great skill, well-balanced player, is able to play out there. But bringing that to the cornerback position in the modern game is very important, because, you know, let's say when I was in cornerback initially, it was long, high balls, your ability to win 50-50 balls, or ability to be in front. But it's a step further now. So you kind of have to play, a lot of the characteristics of playing centre-back are the same as cornerback now, where you're kind of drifting across full back lines or even behind half back lines, picking up ball, but then having to use it coming out going forward. So I just think Ben Cannini just has, and he, you know, he's a big man as well, you know, well able to move. So there's just lots of attributes there that just, you know, his consistency speaks for itself. But and as well his experience, as you were saying, Will, like, you know, he's been there a while as well. So I mean, all those things add into it. And I think, you know what, like, Offaly hurling is coming into a really good time as well. Ben Keneally's probably one of those players that has played during, you know, I suppose tougher days, you'd want to say, maybe, as well.
Oh, man, so, he has slogged, you know, these last 7 years. They were going to the Christy Ring, and Johnny Kelly was saying, it was like, these lads have gone to Ockram. They've gone to Castlebar. They remember losing the penalty shootout against Down in the semi-final in the Christy Ring. This has been low times for a lot of these lads. And
The 20s are getting...
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, like, for the likes of him now that they're coming to starting to ride the crest of a wave, he'd be there going, oh, Jesus, I've had tough days on the road here when Offaly Hurling isn't even making the Sunday game. And here we are now. Like, I mean, that the images we saw coming from Croke Park there on Saturday, and, you know, the celebrations and afterwards, like, Jesus, that must have him 10 feet tall. And, like, you have to be happy for a fellow who's earned his crust big time, having weathered those days. Like, a lot of those younger hurlers are coming through and they're getting huge support. But, you know, having lads like Ben Cannini there who soldiered for a long time for Offaly, like that definitely stands to him.
Yeah, a lot of praise for Dan Burke, which is great to see. I did see as well, someone was asking about the second Offaly helmet that's gone missing. The first one has been found. I think young Ben Miller's one is still missing. So this is what happens. You go to Nolan Park, you celebrate in the pitch. Next thing you turn around, there's thousands of people on the pitch. My helmet's been whipped. And you don't lose a good one. I saw some hurlers who were sharing it going, I remember when I lost my green Cooper at one point. So I think Ben, again, his father would have played Offaly team 94, so hopefully it can be found and be reunited, whoever picked it up along the way. Can Offaly give Cork a game? That's come up a couple of times there. I think I may well have shared it from Richard Hogan as well. I don't think so, because there's 1 week. In this case, it is going to be 7 days, because it's definitely on the Saturday. Offaly had a homecoming today. They're probably going to be out tonight. They're going to go back to training. The thing that was important for them was getting back to the Leinster Championship next year. Advancing in the All-Ireland is pretty fanciful. I think you have to probably get the beaten or the third place Leinster team to really have a chance of winning. In this case, it's Cork. Cork went to Tullamore a couple of months ago. Connolly banged in 3 goals. Declan Dalton had a field day as well. They were brilliant that day. I think Cork, and there's a lot of Cork fans I know that are in the comments as well, I think Cork are primed for a really good run at the All-Ireland series from here. We might be talking about a Cork-Limerick semi-final potentially. I just don't see it happening. I think if Cork are dialed in, Offaly are going to be cannon fodder next week. Concerned citizen there, Offaly have momentum. Doesn't matter how much momentum they have, they're a few levels below Cork.
They haven't got a fucking tsunami, like.
If you look back at Tipperary and Offaly last year,
you know. The power went that day as well, and I was delighted the power went, because the GA goal fee fell.
But if you look at that, you could actually see that there was a big gap in difference in terms of the amount of players that Tipperary had that were just hurling at that level for a long time. Like, that does count for a lot. Cork, like, you can't talk about Cork beating Limerick. It's like if Limerick were going to Offaly next week, you'd be there going, do Offaly have a chance? You'd be there going, no, they don't have a chance. Cork beat Limerick not so long ago. So, no, you can't see it happening. Like, that's not to put a dampener on Offaly at all. It's not to say they're going to go out and get absolutely destroyed. Yeah, it could be a big beating. We don't know. But like you said, look, Offaly, the main thing was getting back into the Leinster Championship. They have an under 20 All-Ireland under the belt. Lots of good things there. You know, keeping the feet on the ground at this stage is also important as well in terms of managing expectations.
For sure, like, Offaly have ticked every box now that they want to the start of the year.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. They've won both competitions they've contested in, so move on. And prepare for next year.
Yeah, to Shane's comment there as well, do you think Offaly should play a second string team? No, they won't risk it. No. It's the last game from back to the clubs after this. They may as well go out and play as strong a team as they possibly can.
Yeah.
Go and have a cut at it. I just think realistically Cork are going to be way too strong.
Yeah, it's a second homecoming really for them. Like, you know, to go and play. Is it on in Tullamore, is it?
It's on Tullamore, yeah. It's a double header with the footballers as well.
It's a second homecoming. Like, I mean, get the players out there and let them play and have a good crack at it and, like, and enjoy it and see what happens. But, yeah.
Yeah. Should the McDonagh teams qualifying for the quarterfinals be scrapped? TJ Mills wondering about that. Look, it was up for vote at Congress. And Willie Mair and Johnny Kelly, definitely neither seemed particularly interested in playing it. Look, I think Neil McManus was on the TV as well, so I only got to rewatch the match when I came home this morning. And he was making a very fair point where he said that Cork beat Antrim a few years back when Antrim won the McDonagh Cup. But the experience of getting Cork to come up to Corrigan Park was worth it even if you lose. So to get to hit off a top team is worth it for the teams coming out of the McDonagh. And that's, I suppose, the benefit for the players. Same as I saw some people suggesting, like, Laois and Offaly would have been much better had it been at Nolan Park or a neutral venue as opposed to being in Croke Park. Players want to play a national final at Croke Park. Doesn't matter if there's a small crowd or not.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, big time.
The one other question I want to take before we finish, which is on that very thing, Dara O'Flynn, will playing Leinster Championship affect the Offaly under-20s next year? It definitely will. So 11 of them are still underage from the 20 starting team. Colin Spain... he came on to play his first game for Offaly yesterday. I think he's overage for next year, so he's not affected. But Dan Ravenhill will be back from injury, so you're talking 11. Realistically, Division 1B of the league, plus the Leinster Championship round robin, some decisions are definitely going to have to be made about, I would say, who plays where. Because unlike this year in the McDonagh, where you can kind of feel your way through the group stage a little bit and you've got one or two big games, I think when it comes to the business end of the under 20, if they want to retain it, they may well have to drop those lads out of the senior panel for a few weeks.
This was where I was on to yourself about the week, during the week. About there's a fine line here now. Next year, what do you do? Do you utilise, you know, 7 or 8 of those guys, put them into the team and run the risk of putting them in, I wouldn't say too early, but you know what I'm saying? They don't be successful at senior level and then they don't win the under 20 Ireland again.
Yeah.
You know, is that a successful year for Offaly? No, it's not. Are they building for Leinster? Maybe they are, you know. Is what's more important? Is it more important maintaining the Leinster status next year or winning the under-20s again? I'm asking you as an Offaly man.
No, I think staying in Leinster is really important. I really do. I think if there's going to be a pathway for these players, that's what's important. Winning another under-20, that'd be great. They're not necessarily going to do that. And Tipperary are going to be really strong next year and they've got a lot of players left over from their team. No guarantee that they would win that. It seems to be just this kind of expectation now, having won one. But staying in Leinster is far more important longer term. But it's very difficult to do. They're going to have to beat Antrim or beat Wexford or Dublin to stay up.
I agree with you, because if you go down, let's say you go down next year and go back into the Drumadonna Cup, you know, Drumadonna Cup is like, I mean this as good as I can, it's like intermediate in club hurling. It's so hard to get up over it. It's great when you get up over it, but all you want to do is get 2 years as senior, you know what I'm saying? So if they can maintain Leinster status next year, that's a huge result for them, truthfully.
Yeah,
the comment here, which is saying, would Skell let you have a live show on a farm with Podge as a special guest? You've no idea how close that was to happening.
Yeah, Podge hit me a fucking kick on yesterday morning. I done the TB test, tried to catch him to dose when he pucked me. Podge is doing well; he's getting strong. I'll put it that way to you.
We were considering going to Capitagal at one point, and unfortunately Galway got knocked out of the championship. So Limerick was the main beneficiary from that defeat. So. Off we go. The name Skirtle back in again. Next year, I know, but I've Cork people messaging me. I'd Ulster people DM me earlier on going, bring it up to Ulster. And then people going, you have to go to Kilkenny for Murph. So, there's good news from Ross Wynn, who I recognise as an Offaly fan watching along as well. Ben Miller's has been found. So that's good news. Two helmets reunited with their owners over the last few days. Offaly should play Cork and Burr. That's not going to happen because GAA Gore show in both games, so it's definitely in Tullamore. But there we go. We'll talk about the McDonagh in a little bit more. Hold on a second, actually. Murph's micro would have been safe. What helmet do you wear, Murph? Do you wear a micro?
Green micro, yeah. I don't know what that means. It would be safe that lads wouldn't rob the micro.
No one wanted, yeah.
Just the Coopers that are in danger, yeah. Yeah.
Why'd you never go for a Cooper?
I had one of the old Coopers.
This is why.
No, never received.
Go away, Murph. Go away.
Never. You will not see one post from me about micro. Never received anything. I had an old Cooper years ago, and once that broke, I know there's new Coopers out as well. I bought a micro, and that was the one that was comfortable for me, and that was it. Just stayed with that, and then I actually had a normal micro, but they had brought out these extra light ones, which are the current ones now, and I kept my old one. Once we won the All-Ireland 2011, kept that one. And then by the time Yi beat us in the Leinster final in 2012, I threw away that one.
Superstition.
Got the extra light one then. But no, that was it. Just other helmets just weren't really comfortable. But no, never got a cent, Scal. Never got a cent. I wouldn't mind the other ones breaking at the moment as well, so I have to go buy a new one. But anyway.
Crack of the ash there. Helmets being dragged from the crying hands of Offaly children as we speak. Offaly thieves, I would say, if they took the helmet off the pitch in the first place. So little or no sympathy. And yeah, a few there looking for us to go to Kilkenny City would be ideal for those in the southeast. Watch this space. We'll see what we can do. If you keep demanding them, we'll have to go. I can show these comments to the higher ups and we can go.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. This live pod, looking back on the weekend of the Leinster and Munster Championships, we will do the Joe McDonagh Cup final in a lot more detail on the members pod for this week, was of course brought to you by Borgosh Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the Hurling Pod and they're proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship as well. They're helping us to go to Dolan's June the 19th. You can watch out for that ticketing link. I have it in the comments. I will stick it in the YouTube comments. Anyone who DM me, I've sent the link. I believe it'll be going live on the Off the Ball page for events at some point tomorrow or the next day. But if you want to get in early, judge that as a pre-sale event. Football Pod, you can't even go to theirs. Croke Park sold out, which is absolutely crazy. Hopefully our big one is going to sell just as well. We're going to Dolan's. It's going to be our pod in the West for this year. All the details, I'll stick them in the comments a little bit later on. Thanks a million to everyone for joining us tonight. If you're watching us on YouTube particularly, leave us a like on the way out. It definitely helps more people to see the pod. Paul Murphy, thanking you.
Thanks, lads.
James Skirting, as you came back in the comments a few minutes ago, thanks a million.
I've been called worse, thank you.
You've been called a lot worse, right? We'll see the boys from the members pod a bit later in the week. Thanks again to all of you for watching. See you again.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy,
proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.